this is Mike Arrington from TechCrunch. Today I have the honor of getting a few minutes to talk with Senator Mike Gravel, Democratic candidate for president in 2008, about his positions on technology-related issues. Senator Gravel, thank you for taking the time with me today, and welcome to TechCrunch.
Well, thank you for having me.
So where are you in the world today?
Well, I'm at a hotel just outside the airport in Chicago, working on the last three chapters of my book, Citizen Power, trying to get that done. And then tomorrow I go down to Des Moines for a debate on NPR, and then on to Dearborn that night. And I'll be in Michigan for 4 days, and then on to Los Angeles, and then back to then to Las Vegas, and then from there to New Hampshire.
Wow.
Yes.
Where do you call home these days?
I live in Arlington, Virginia. My wife and I rent an apartment. We've been living there for about the last 13 years. We rent in a high rise. We look right down at the Iwo Jima Memorial and the Potomac River. So we have a very... very nice. It's a modest, it's a nice apartment. It's 1,300 square feet, and it's very adequate. I keep joking that it's ideal. If you lose your glasses, you can find them very quickly.
Now, when I'm in Chicago, particularly at an airport, a hotel near the airport, it's usually because of the weather in Chicago has grounded my airplane. Is that what's happened to you, or did you meet?
That's exactly what happened. I was on my way to the debate, the black and brown debate, day before yesterday on Saturday, and it was the hand of Providence that didn't want me to go. Friday night, United canceled the flight. I called late at night. They rescheduled another one in the morning out of National. I took that, got to Chicago. They canceled the one to Des Moines, so I thought I'd rent a car. I rented a car 5 miles out of the airport. We got a flat. The jack wouldn't work on this vehicle, would you believe it? And it took 3 hours to get, and I had 5 hours to drive to Des Moines. It took 3 hours and 3.5 hours to get somebody there to service it, AAA. And then we took it tire to a place, Just Tires, and they wouldn't touch it for 2 hours. So that blew the whole thing. I took the car back to Hertz. They gave me a total refund and took a hotel here in Chicago, waiting till Tuesday for this debate in Des Moines, but hold up here to just work on my book.
Well, at least you get some quiet time to work on your book.
Yes, very much so.
So let's jump into the questions that I have. Technology leadership is the first one. It's a broad question. But the U.S. has been a technology leader worldwide through the last decades. A lot of the growth has been through international markets, though. What would you do to advance our efforts to continue to grow internationally?
One, I'd be very open to immigration, both the technical people and also other people, and also student visas and tourists. It is appalling. We've lost about $20 billion this last year on these excessive this criteria of batting down the hatches that we're afraid of everybody in the world. It is pathetic, and I think we're damaging ourselves in a high-tech area with this kind of a paranoid fear that we have.
Well, you mentioned visas in there a couple of times. Let's talk specifically about H-1B visas. The Congress has limited the number of H-1Bs, which are visas that go out to educated foreigners who want to come and work in the U.S. for 7 years. Generally, you have to have the equivalent of a bachelor's degree to get one. The demand for them is probably around 150 or 200,000 a year based on the number of applications received, but we're giving out just 65,000 a year now, down from more than double that a few years ago. Do you think, what, well, first of all, what's your position on H-1B visas in general?
I am very, very much an advocate for them. And not only that, I would leave it open-ended. I would not put a limit on them. That this is just so short-sighted that we don't want, here, we've got a program that we want to limit intelligent people coming to our country. Does it get any stupider than that?
Yeah, particularly since a lot of these people, I don't want to editorialize here, but a lot of these people end up staying and starting companies, and some of the most prominent entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley were originally H-1B visa holders.
Oh, I know one personally, and believe it, I'm supporting him on an interesting project. They'll come to visibility in several months from now.
Oh, I can't wait. Please put him in touch with me. I'd like to hear what he's up to.
Okay.
So you're in favor of no caps at all, that basically if you qualify, you should get an H-1B visa.
Exactly. In fact, I would go even further than that. This whole attitude on immigration is appalling. I am very much of a globalist, and I think we should have open markets. This type of thing, we've had these undocumented aliens that are here. Undocumented aliens. Here, our unemployment is really down, so we can really say there's nobody taking jobs from anybody. Yet we have, 11, 12 million people that are here employed doing activities. What is the problem? Undocumented. If we need jobs to be done in this country, we should just open our borders and let people come in and do the work. How stupid we are to say, well, one, they're undocumented, and then you get these nativists, rednecks, who want to chase them out of the country. And then, of course, we got liberals that then, let them get a chance to get to become residents, but they got to go back to their country, and they got to pay fines, and we got to punish them. The only thing they're guilty of is filling jobs that needed to be done and feeding their families. How bizarre our policy is. And point of fact, this whole immigration tune is nothing but scapegoating because of the failures that we have in this country.
Well, I'll tell you that your position on H-1Bs is going to be very popular in Silicon Valley. And of course, the issue cannot be completely separated from immigration in general. And I appreciate your candid views on that as well. Let's talk about education for a minute. We have a great higher education system in the U.S. It's probably the best in the world, but not enough students at the younger ages seem to be interested in science and math. We certainly turn out fewer engineers compared to China and India in particular than we used to. What can we do with education in the U.S. to support technology-related fields to get more children interested in science and math? I know the 2001 No Child Left Behind Act is designed to bridge the gap between primary and secondary education. What are your views on that in general and just education? What can we do?
Well, first off, No Child Left Behind is essentially founded on political cosmetic rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching to the test is not teaching. You need a broader spectrum than that. Secondly, when you have a national education system where one-third of our children do not graduate from high school, you can focus on engineering and those things. But, my God, the whole country is on a way to a disaster. And this isn't something that happened just last 6 years. This is something that's been going on for the last 40 years. Our educational system should be the number one priority. We're no different. Our goal should be the same thing as Finland, as Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Spain, Iceland, and that is to educate our children from childhood to PhD level, and the entire cost of it paid by the government. That's what our education should be, the number one activity in a democracy. And in our democracy, hell, it's not even close to that. We're so enraptured with becoming the military superpower of the world rather than the educational superpower of the world. And you're quite right. We have a higher educational system that is to be admired, but it is slowly deteriorating. When you stop and realize that the cutback on Chinese students, the cutback on Japanese students, Indian students, and foreign students in general coming to American universities and going to other universities in other parts of the world is the beginning of the demise of our ascendancy in higher education. It's because of the visa problems, it's the immigration problems, it's this national paranoia that we're fed with fear of foreigners. And so you're going to feel it in the high-tech area because you're going to see the new high-tech areas centered in China and in Japan and in India. And though we may have a lot of entrepreneurialism, they're going to develop their own sense of entrepreneurialism when we don't let them into this country and participate of what we have to offer.
What about the digital divide? It's pretty clear that in the U.S., clear around the world, but in the U.S. in particular, that there's a clear divide between the people who have access to technology, computers, the internet, and those that don't. And even in the schools, there are schools that have computers, lots of computers for children and internet access, and then there are schools that don't. What can and should we do to bridge the gap?
Here again, the educational establishment should totally erase any divide. Obviously, the internet is becoming ubiquitous, and we should capitalize on that by getting the necessary hardware into all educational institutions, libraries, and private organizations should focus on this. There shouldn't be a child in this country that should not have the ability to have a computer at a very young age. And here again, these are policies that should be implemented, and thank God there are some institutions, I think Microsoft, Dell, and other people in the field have programs to try and bring about expansion in this regard. It's not enough. We need a national program to eliminate the divide, not only for children, but for adults and middle America who are not totally attuned to the technology. Here, I'm a person in my 70s, and I had the good fortune that when I left the Congress, talking to a person at a university who advised me to become computer literate or I would not be able to compete in the world, and I did make myself computer literate, and I've enjoyed the benefits of that literacy ever since.
Talk about identity theft for a second. It's a big problem in the U.S., maybe as big as $60 billion a year, just in losses for affected individuals. And the internet is becoming sort of the way to steal people's identity and exploit it. Should the government does involve itself now in protecting personal privacy. There are a number of criminal and civil laws on the books, but the problem doesn't seem to be solved by the current laws, or at least current enforcement of the laws. Do you think the government should do more to prevent the theft of identity online, or should the free markets be left to fix the problem?
I think the government needs to do more. There's many areas that I'm not all that keen to expand government police powers. But now, obviously, the private sector can do a lot, and that is with these security systems coming forth very rapidly with new iterations. And you get it all the time, you know, whether it's McAfee or others that tell you, here, just upload this and keep you current. Well, that's fine. But I think that we need the punishment situation. I say this with tongue in cheek, but I get so angry when we get hackers turning around and debilitating our computers and causing us tremendous loss of time. I say this with tongue in cheek. I'd like to bring back public flogging for these people. But absent that, I do think there's some serious jail time for these young people to recognize that this is serious privacy invasions, and they can't do this wantonly. They're like little dogs running around trying to pee on everybody's computer. This has got to stop. And so if it needs a combination of greater law enforcement, there is more damage done in society with the present level, inadequate level, I might say, of law enforcement in this regard than we have with the Al-Qaeda terrorism in the United States. I mean, our priorities are so skewed that we just really don't know which way to turn to do the right thing.
When I spoke to Senator McCain about this issue, he mentioned that his identity was stolen at one point. And that
he's one that probably should have his identity stolen.
he said, it's kind of funny, he said that the perpetrators are now guests of the state of Arizona, so I guess they caught them. But
Good.
Mobile spectrum. Now, this is a complicated issue, but there's a way to think about it more generally. When cell phone carriers first acquired the rights to the mobile spectrum in the 90s, I'm sorry, even earlier, they received very broad rights that allowed them to put a number of rules in place that some people see as egregious, forcing lock-in of the consumer, et cetera. The FCC is holding a new auction early next year for the 700 megahertz part of the spectrum, and there are competing factions. On the one side, you have the existing carriers that want similar rules to the last time, and then there's a new group led by Google that would like to have rules put in place that would force open access on the carriers. Do you have an opinion on the mobile spectrum auction?
Well, I sure do. I would force open access on all of them and on retroactively on what has been granted. You're talking about the ether is public domain and how these companies can sequester this and monopolize it to their personal profits, to the detriment of the people, I think is horrible. That whole area has to be reexamined, whether it's the spectrum for cell phones, for the internet, for networks, for television, all that. All of that has to be reexamined. Our communication systems, except with the advent of the internet, have been in the toilet. And I feel this directly. Here I'm being shut out by networks because they don't feel that my voice is what they want to hear because of my views on the military-industrial complex. Our country is controlled by five major corporations control the information system, 90% of what the American people hear. That is wrong, and that is how a democracy will meet its demise. All of this has to be reexamined. Technology is moving so fast. We are in a technological knowledge revolution, and we have to rise to that level, and we have to be guided. I have somewhat of a libertarian tendency, and so I'm guided by the attitude that it has to be free, free, and freedom, freedom. That would be my guide in this regard.
China's been an issue that's been coming up more and more often, even here in Silicon Valley. Recently, Yahoo disclosed some information to China upon their request about a Yahoo Mail account, and it turned out that the information was used to imprison a journalist talking about the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square incident. Yahoo's CEO and general counsel were lambasted in Congress in recent hearings. Even more recently, Google was criticized for handing over information about an Israeli. Again, this is an issue that was significantly less onerous on the Israeli involved than in China. But again, it was in a situation where private information about individuals was being disclosed. What should we do about this? Should we try to stop U.S. companies from doing business with governments that are perpetuating human rights abuses against their their citizens?
What we should do is we should pass a law not letting American companies give out this information, period. Now, that means that they will be in a quandary with countries like China and Israel. Well, that's their problem, meaning China and Israel, because the American companies that they thirst for our technology, they'll have no choice but to take our technology just the way we wrap it, not the way they want to wrap it. And so the law, we should enforce the law on these corporations. This is a whole problem of globalization and national sovereignty. And it's going to lead to other things. But in the short run, we should pass a law that says that Google, Yahoo, and anybody else who's incorporated in this country cannot release private information on private individuals to the detriment of those individuals to any foreign government, period.
Okay. A slightly less important topic, but one that people here still care a lot about, Internet taxes. Should the ban be permanent?
Yes. God. Now, keep in mind, I'm the guy that wants to do away with the income tax on individuals and on corporations. You know, we have the most corrupt tax system in the world. And I don't understand when American corporate officers, whether in Silicon Valley or anywhere else in the United States, hear me talk about wanting to do with corporate income taxes, don't flood my campaign with contributions. Are they retarded or something? You know, do they not understand what I'm saying? Do they not want to spend a moment to read about what I'm talking about? I mean, this is really appalling that they should be so stupid as to want to lock in to a system of taxation which is corrupt and counterproductive to a capitalist system. I want American enterprise to do one job, and that is produce efficiently. Now, what we cost the American enterprise system is about $270 billion a year. That's half what we've spent in Iraq in the last 4 years. And $270 billion a year, that is to comply with our corrupt system of taxation. And we can turn around and we can put in place a fair tax, which is a retail sales tax with total transparency that will advantage the individual citizen, that we can make very progressive with a rebate and can solve our problem with the fiscal gap, the $50 trillion fiscal gap we have, by turning this country from a consuming country to a savings country. That's what can happen. And so all I can say in your next blog to your constituency in Silicon Valley, just ask them for me. Are they retarded or can they understand the English language?
Yeah, no, I will. I'll tell you that, first of all, I love your proposal for taxes. But also, even if we do have an income tax, what I hate is the forms. I mean, the rules are, and I'm a Stanford-trained lawyer, and I cannot figure out, you know, our own income tax forms and all the rules. I have to use an accountant to do that, and it sure would be nice if we had at least a simplified tax structure.
It's impossible. It's impossible to do that. With all due respect, you're being naive. I was on the finance committee for 8 years, and I got to tell you, the code stands 4 feet high, and there's not a human being on earth that understands the totality of it. There's only one way to solve this problem, is to do away with it. There's no such a thing as a compromise with ignorance, with a failed system. You don't compromise a failed system, you do away with it. And you can establish a simple system, which is transparency. Here, I'll know what you're paying, you'll know what I'm paying. It's that simple, and then you can turn around. You want to talk about prosperity in this country? If we can do away with taxes on individuals and corporations, we'll create the largest tax haven in the world. Money and capital will flow into this country that will be able to make education number one, rebuild our corporate infrastructure, pay for health care for everybody, and hopefully get a handle on our paranoia and do away with the military-industrial complex, which is ruling and bringing about our economic demise.
I'll tell you, I'm now, as you're talking, I'm on gravel08.com making a donation to your campaign.
Thank you. Max out if you can. We need the money, desperately. But then go to Silicon Valley. Tell your people that I just really do not understand that how all of these corporate enterprises, small business and big business, who are going to benefit handsomely by not only by not having to pay any income taxes, but by not having to pay for the unproductive accountants and attorneys to meet the challenge of the idiotic tax code that we have. I mean, this is simple intelligence that they don't seem to measure up to, and that says something about American enterprise.
So I can't wait to hear your position on net neutrality.
Oh, net neutrality. My God, there should be no involvement at all of the government in the use of the Internet. It should be free. I mean, this is the only place right now where we have a chance of human survival over the oppressiveness of government. You know, government is a tool. We can take it up when we need it, put it down when we need it. But the tragedy is when we take it up, it becomes a tool of tyrants. And we need a device that where people can go to become informed. And that, in my mind, is the Internet. And so where do I stand? My God, get the government to get its clammy hands off of it.
And should the government intervene when large corporations that own the bandwidth try to stop or try to put in place pricing mechanisms that favor some companies over others?
Totally. And it should be outlawed. Not only intervene, we should have laws on the books that just plain outlaw that practice.
Should people be put in jail for stealing songs on the Internet?
I don't know enough about the whole patent issue, copyright issue. I truly don't. I do know that I hired Benjamin Franklin, who was opposed to the patents, and of course he never made a dime off of his stoves because other people patented his stoves. I just don't know. That's a very philosophical issue. Is there incentive for the creative person? I think there always is, because a person wants to do the right thing. It's a little bit like saying, is an entrepreneur motivated by money or motivated by creativity? I think an entrepreneur is motivated more by creativity, enjoys the rewards, but it's not the rewards that motivates first and foremost. So with respect to patents and copyrights, here, a person who's got a song in his heart, does he write the song because he's going to have a copyright, or does he write the song because he wants to hear the voice in his heart? I don't know. All I can do is give you the philosophical expression that I've just articulated.
Excuse me. What do you want to do about renewable energy, and how can the government promote renewable energy science?
There's a lot of things the government can do. One of the first and foremost is to get the hell out of the way and let some of these forces be released. The first and foremost is to stop the subsidies. At one of the debates, the various presidential candidates were asked, well, because of a spike in the price of oil, they're asking about price gouging and all that, and what would you do? And everybody had some idea that there was gouging going on. Well, every time there's a spike, there's always somebody in Congress that wants a study to check, see if there's price gouging. They've never found any price gouging by and large, or there's some instances. But when it got to me, I said, hey, let the price rise. You know, this is economics 101. The higher the price can rise, the sooner you get alternative forms of energy. In fact, I am very much and would work to institute a tax on carbon. And then I would take that tax, pool that money, and bring in other countries in the world to tax their people on carbon so that we could take these pooled resources and integrate the global engineering and scientific community to get us off of carbon in a decade. And we can do it. We truly can do it. With respect to, we've got technology right off the shelf. I'm talking about wind and solar. That you can use immediately. It would create unbelievable number of jobs if we had 5 million wind devices in this country. We could electrify the country, and we could set it up with alternative photovoltaic, and we would not be dependent upon 1 ounce of gasoline. Now, all you need is leadership to do that, and all you need is to open the spigots. And if you're going to have a subsidy, I would rather than subsidies pass a few laws to goose people along. And here's the kind of law I'd like to see passed, and that is that the you take CAFE standards rather than talk here. When you hear these politicians talking, we're going to get this done by 2020. My God, you can get this done in 5-6 years. Why 2020? CAFE standards, we match Europe in the next 5 years, period. That's it. You pass the law. They'll do it. They'll shape up. We did this with the Clean Air Act. Oh, every time we turned around, the automobile industry couldn't even do it. But, of course, when you pass the law, they got off their butts and did it. I'll tell you the example of how bad sometimes the American enterprise can be. One of the reasons why we couldn't change the tire on this Ford SUV that we had was because the jack could not jack up this SUV high enough to take off the tire. Now, listen to me. Couldn't jack up the SUV. It probably could do it on a perfect plane, but we're on the side of the road. And so we couldn't even take off the damn tire because of the jack that Ford put on this vehicle. It was probably a good enough jack for a car, but not for an SUV. Now, this is American enterprise at its best. Little wonder we have Toyota eating our lunch and the European cars eating our lunch on mileage and the likes of that. So I could go on with examples, but if we have the will, we can do it, and it's very simple. You want to get off of carbon, not paying the carbon tax, get yourself a hydrogen fuel vehicle. You know, why is it that we have in Norway an oil country that has a highway 300 miles long, and they have hydrogen fueling stations all along that highway? Why can't we turn around and pass a law mandating that the oil companies do this? Just like we mandate that they have to have CAFE standards. We don't have to give them any incentives. We just pass a law. They just got to do it. It's in the best interest of this country. We don't have to give them any of our tax dollars. We just pass a law telling them to do the right thing. That's the beginning of how we should do our activities. But it's impossible to do, Michael, for the very simple reason that they got 35,000 lobbyists in Washington whose job it is to protect their corporate interests, and I might say their tax advantages, at the detriment to the average American from an environmental point of view and from an economic point of view.
So let's talk about the important stuff now, YouTube. You have you've had a couple of awesome videos on YouTube. One, and I'll link to them in my post, but one of them is Power to the People, and the other one is The Rock. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, just the history and why you did these? And I mean, they're great. What in Power to the People, you're actually rapping.
Well, not rapping. Here's what happened. First off, the Rock one was done by two young guys in Southern California. They contacted my representative, asked if I would throw a rock in the water. And immediately I said yes. I understood the rock meant ripples. Ripples meant having an influence.
Yep.
And so they did it. I gave them a whole day. And I did exactly what they told me to do. They had it all figured out. I didn't even figure out what they were doing. I was so busy thinking of other things. But I followed their instructions. And lo and behold, and then they wanted to have me preview. I said, no, if this is your product, this is your work, you do what you want with it. And it was. And so they put it on the tube, and lo and behold, it's had more hits than anything else. And it made me famous on the tube. And so, and then every time I was interviewed by the media, I would give out their names and phone numbers and go interview them. You know, they're the heroes of this. All I am is just a warm body, and I'm flattered that they would take this, this metaphor of human life and apply it to me. And it's a metaphor that applies to everybody. What this metaphor is that you focus on something very important in life, and you go do it, and you cause ripples, and then you go off to your reward. What is more significant to human life than that? What's more rewarding? And so that they flattered me with that. And then with this other one that was done, we did that in the hotel room. And the guy went to the Home Depot, bought a blue tarp, and then had a flag, and then some tape, taped up this, and then had a list of words that I would repeat over and over again in very slight phrase. And then he knew exactly how he was going to weave this together. And then when I saw it, I just thought it was hilarious. He got the message across. Here you got the Democratic Party, the war party, you know, not only the war party for Iraq with the Republicans, but the war party with Iran and Bush and the Republicans, but the Democratic Party that's supposed to believe in all these great things that has silenced me. Howard Dean has fixed it, so I'm not in any of the Democratic Party-sanctioned debates. And I've been cut out of the winter meeting. Now, this is the Democratic Party that the Democrats should be really proud of. Well, that's what's happened. And so what this guy, he was incensed over this. This is Rich Swartz. He was incensed over this, came to us, flew out on his own nickel, and taped me doing these words. And he's the one that put these words together into the message he wanted to create, which in my mind is an embarrassment to the Democratic Party of the United States of America under its existing warmongering leadership.
Well, it's an awesome statement, and I can't wait to show it to my readers as well, although it has tons of hits already, both of the videos.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to get together. He's got some other ideas that we're going to do.
Good. Oh, I definitely want to hear about it from your campaign when they're published.
Please.
So are you a Mac or a PC guy?
Well, I got to tell you, I've been PC all of my life, and then lo and behold, this year, in order to do some video streaming and responding to people's questions, I bought a Mac. And so I'm sitting right in front of a Mac. Now, if you can imagine at my age having to conquer both, I sit in front of my Mac and I got to think twice as I take a step because I think in terms of a PC. So I'm an equal opportunity kind of guy. I own a Mac. And I got to tell you, if way back when people say, oh, you had to get a Mac, it's better than a PC, well, I'm prepared to give testimony that it is more intuitive than a PC, but the PC has universality. It's a little bit like the Beta and the other device. The other device won out, but Beta works better. But then that's the way the cookie crumbles.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, it's a good analogy. I'm like most people in Silicon Valley and most journalists, I'm a Mac guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But
I wish I'd have started out that way. Life would have been a little easier for me than it is right now.
Do you have an iPod?
Oh, yes, I've got an iPod, and I hear your laugh. You know, I bought an iPod, and, of course, everybody's talking, you got to have an iPod, too. It's a Mac iPod. It's not an in fact, I bought an MP3 player, and I couldn't play the things I wanted to play on it. So I had to go buy and I bought the expensive one. I got a 40 meg deal. So I buy an iPod, and I hear all about this music. So I load it all up with music, which I don't listen to. I really wanted it for books. So I now have it loaded on with books after books after books. And so what I do is, I'm dyslexic. So it's a natural, it's a boon for me, and I listen to books all the time. And right now, what am I in the middle of? I just finished Fail States, and I'm now, name escapes me here talking about senior moment, but I'm halfway through another one. Elvis is about his latest book on the Founding Fathers, which isn't as good as I was hoping it'd be. But he's a good historian in any event. But since I'm so steeped in this area, I need better than good. I need great, great, great skullduggery stuff.
Well, that's all I have for you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before I let you get back to writing your book?
Well, I think I covered immigration with you. I think here's the thing that I want to cover one thing that's most important with respect to the Internet. What the Internet makes possible is what I've raised, and that is, I want to empower the American people to become lawmakers. The central power of government is making laws. And so until the American people are able to make laws, they will never, never control their government. They've never controlled it from the get-go. But until they can make laws, and now with the technology of the Internet, I have the ability to ask Americans, do you want to be empowered to become lawmakers? Because I've written a law called the National Initiative. It's a federal ballot initiative where 16 million Americans vote for it, and the Congress, they'll never pass it. It dilutes their power. But if we can get 16 million Americans to vote for this on the Internet at nationalinitiative.us or ni4d.us, you can go there and you can vote for it, and you can back and look at it a month later, and you can change your vote if you want. But when you get 16 million Americans to vote for this, Americans will be empowered to make laws in every government jurisdiction of the United States. They will become empowered to make laws in partnership with their elected officials. They will become the fourth leg of a system of checks and balances that cannot be voided. That's really what is at hand. And so this would release the freedom and creativity of the American people to pass laws to protect themselves. Representative government is broken. And there's only two venues for change. One, the government where the problem exists, and the people where the corrections can take place, and it's the Internet and the freedom of the Internet that makes all this possible. And that's what is so important with this advance in communications and the answer to the paradigm, which is what I'm trying to do, is change the paradigm of human governance, is to empower the people to become lawmakers. Please pass that message around to your right. constituency.
And it's nationalinitiative.us, which
Correct.
Is open right now.
Correct.
Senator Gravel, thank you very much for your time, and good luck. Well, good luck getting out of Chicago, first of all, but good luck in the upcoming primaries, and I hope you do very well.
Thank you. If I do at all, it's because of the Internet, because I haven't spent $300,000 on this campaign, and I'm a player, and it's all because of what volunteers on their own initiative have done for me on the Internet. That's why I love freedom.
Well, that's a great way to end the podcast. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.